left off last week, we were discussing the principle of Bittul Berov. So we mentioned as a fundamental machlokes in the Rishonim how Bittul Berov works conceptually, at least concerning Yavish B'Yavish. When you have three pieces of dry meat mixed together, two are kosher, one's treif. So do we say that the treif meat loses its characteristics and loses its traits in our, what the Rush used the phrase, it's a nepach lios heter? Well, do we say, no, that's not true. It's an epochlios heter. Just statistically, you're allowed to eat the meat because the odds are you're probably eating a kosher piece of meat. If kamin would be, you can eat all three. So according to the Rosh, Mikra, Din, Torah, Mikra, Banan, Yimam, Shemut, Wachat, Chil, eat all three. Not only to eat all three at the same time. You can make a sandwich out of the three slices, and that's fine because it's an epochlios heter. Whereas according to the Tosfos Rid, that would be a Nisa Deraisa, because according to the Tosfos Rid, there is no principle of a Nepach Lios Heter. We said at the end of the Shiur that even the Tosfos Rid probably would concede by Alach Malach, when you have a mixture of two liquids that get mixed together, and everybody says that it's a Nepach Lios Heter, because otherwise, any drop you take, any spoon that you, a spoonful of the liquid that you take, will inevitably have some of the tray for the liquid in it also. So if you don't accept the view of the Rush, at least vis-a-vis Lach Malach, then the whole concept of Tarovus and Lach Malach will really be meaningless. So that idea that Bittul Berov derived from Acharam Hatos really transforms characteristics, changes character traits. So this is something that exists in some degree according to everybody, and according to the Rush, it even extends in the realm of Yavish B'Yavish. But we have to stop for a moment and ask ourselves, do we really accept this idea of Isenepach Lios Hatos, this Zeres HaKosim of Acharam Lahatos, which as we saw last week, Chaim said has its source from Dayanim, that the Dayanim, the Dayanim says part becomes as we say in Chayav. How far does this Zeres HaKosim go? Does this really, really mean it to the complete extent that it sounds like? So the Rush himself, who was the biggest believer of Isenepach Lios Hatos, raises a red flag concerning Isenepach Lios Hatos, says the Rush. If you take the principle of Isenepach Lios Hatos to its logical conclusion, you're going to be led with what appears to be a really, really strange strange halacha. What's the din if you have three pieces of kosher meat, and there's three pieces of meat, two of them are kosher, one is treif, to get mixed up together? First, we pass it into mutter. Then somebody throws in a fourth piece of meat, and we know that that fourth piece of meat is treif. So if Isenepach Lios Hatos, so we should say, well, now you have three kosher ones and one treif one, so now you have four kosher ones. Then someone throws in another piece, and so you should say, well, I have four kosher ones, one treif. Oh, the treif one now becomes kosher, and kohen v'chayna. So at the end of the day, I have 1,000 pieces of meat there, and we know that based on the DNA, 998 of them are treif, and two of them are kosher, and it's mutter, because each time you have a new tarovus, each time you declare Isenepach Lios Hatos. Would you say such a thing? Well, let's say in the situation of lach. So I'm cooking a potato soup, and a little bit of chaza falls in. So I say, okay, no problem. It's an epoch lios heter, it's bottle finished. Then a little bit more chaza falls in. It's an epoch lios heter, it's bottle. I keep on saying that. If doing this for 10 times, I now have chaza soup with a little bit of potatoes in it. So would you say it's mutter? Would you say it's an epoch lios heter, everything is mutter? So believe it or not, there's one day in Rishon that says it. The Rav, it says, yeah, machanami. The Rav says you can eat the soup. It's not chaza soup, because the Rav would believe, mama, if Amunah Shleima is an epoch lios heter, that's it. It changes the world. The facts are changed. It's not chaza anymore, it's potato soup. It smells like chaza soup. It tastes like chaza. It's an epoch lios heter finished. So all the other Rishonim disagree. So what's pshat? Why do the other Rishonim disagree? So the Rush says, l'chara conceptually, the Ravid is right. But even though the Ravid, l'chara is correct conceptually, says the Rush, you can't be right, l'maisa. You know why? But says the Rush, there's one thing that can undo a tarovus. There's one thing that can undo the principle of is an epoch lios heter, and that's if it's no longer tarovus. What do you mean it's no longer tarovus? If it's what's called nikar issa. We gave the marshal at the end of the week. Last week, if you have three pieces of meat in front of you on the table, and they're all wrapped up. Two of them say, oh, you and them, and one of them says a treif on it. Oh, it's Bittul Berov. I can eat all three. That's a joke. If the piece says on a treif, if it's nikra is, if I know that it's treif, so that's not called a tarevis. Tarevis means when you have things of ma'ur v'yachad, it's not nikra, you can't tell what's what. That's when Uchas Tarevis kicks in. Calls man that it's not ma'ura, then it's nishkin tarevis. If it's not a tarevis, then Bittul doesn't apply. So that's what the Rush says. That tarovus can be overturned in many, many different ways. Either a tarovus can be overturned if it's physically visible, that this piece of meat says on it, big bold letters, treif, that undermines the entire tarovus. Or the Rush says, tarovus can be undermined halachically as well. How can it be undermined halachically, says the Rush, if you know statistically on the board that the numbers are no longer in your favor. If you know for a fact that you have more issa than heter here, so that declares it's a nikra issa. That's a different kind of nikra issa. That's not nikra issa according to the Chai, that's Nikar Issa according to the math. But that's also considered to be Nikar Issa. Once it's Nikar Issa that you know out of the sum total of pieces of meat that's here, Lamaisa, more than a treif than kosher, so that's called Nikar Issa, and it's no longer Tarovis. Once it's no longer Tarovis, then we have to say, it's called an Aloha Chai Zivineir. Chai Zivineir means that the piece of meat that was treif was sleeping, means we declared that it was kosher, it was sleep, the Issa is sleeping, the Issa is dormant, but once more Issa ends into the picture, so then it's what's called Chai Zivineir. It wakes up again. I know that these days it's a tough statement to say Chai Zvenei, you know, I think a lot of people can be Chai Zvenei during the course of the week. People fall asleep, people are tired, they go to sleep late, they stay asleep as early, so they sleep a little bit and they get a big kick. Oh, Chai Zvenei, that's what the Rosh says, that the meat, man, he quotes a pasuk for Yochetz Kini or something like that, a pasuk from Daniel or something, he quotes a pasuk for that principle called Chai Zvenei. This idea that the Rosh is telling us that you can undermine a bittul, its bittul really took effect, and yet somebody's going to come and is going to declare that bittul isn't really effective as we thought it was, because the facts have changed. So we know that that's true if it's physically nikra iser. Now the Rosh is telling us that it's true if it's statistically nikra iser. There's a third type of nikra iser that's neither visible nor statistically. There's a third potential type of nigra iser, and that's based on a Rashba in Maseches Chulin. You know, we've been speaking for the last 2 weeks about the principle of Bittul Barayv. Bittul Barayv is gavaldik, it's great. Acharon Mahatos, Dayonim, it's the greatest thing in the world. When you have a Tarovus of a majority head there, the minority iser, everything becomes bottle. Comes the Mishnah of Maseches Chulin and says that that's not exactly what happens. Hilchos Tarovus, those who remember the Yodeshim from a few years ago, Hilchos Tarovus, the halacha is, if I'm cooking a pot of potato soup, and now a little bit of chaz falls in, so the answer to the question, whether that food is mutter, is not, is there a rov? The answer to that question is, says the Mishnah, is there no sintam? Can you discern the taste of the chazer or not? If there's enough chazer in that soup to taste a little bit of chazer, then the entire soup is treif. If it's so little, you can't even taste the chazer, then everything is mutter. That's the Pefershim Mishnah in the seventh prayer of Chulin. It's coming up in Daf Yomi in about 2-3 days. Harezeh b'naisin tam. You follow naisin tam. So come the Rishonim and ask Kasha, why do you follow naisin tam? Where does that come from? Why do you follow rov? Achir rav lahatos. Isn't there a din of rov? Whenever you have, I'm cooking a pot of potato soup, and a little bit of chazer falls in, so you still have a rov, the majority is still potato soup. So why do you say, Ram Lahatos, rov should carry the day. So where did this Mishnah come from? Of Nisin Tam. So the posture, so the answer to this question is that's not a question in the first place. That this is the Gzeres HaKos of Nisin Tam. The Gemara learns out from Sukkim that Nisin Tam is a problem. Nisin Tam meaning that even though I can't see the Yisr anymore, but I can taste it. Whatever I can taste is problematic. So L'chor, the answer to the question is that the principle of Nisin Tam is the exception to the rule of rov. The Torah says rov, 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 rov. But if you have nos and dam, so nos and dam, rov doesn't apply. You take the pasuk of rov and discard it, put it away, cross it out. Whenever you have nos and dam is more important than rov. That's what I would have said. That it's just exerce kos of yam. So come to Rashi and Chul and says it's more than that. Comes to Rashi and says, you know why there's a principle called nos and dam? How is it conceptually that the halacha tells us there's a principle called nos and dam? If Achiram Mahatos is screaming out at us, rov, 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 so what do you mean Nisin Tam? Where does Nisin Tam fit into the picture? Says the Rashba, what Nisin Tam means is as follows. Says the Rashba, you would agree that if I had 3 pieces of meat and they were all marked, you wouldn't apply rov, because you can see there's a principle called Nikra Isser. So how does Nikra Isser take place? So we thought that Nikra Isser is defined by a person's eyes. Whatever I could see, so that happens to be true, that if I could see the piece of meat is treif, I recognize this piece, and I know this meat is different than the other meat, I know this is the piece of chazer. So of course that's called Nikra Isser. Says the Rashba, you can create Nikra Isser in a different way as well. You can create Nikra Isser based on taste. Says the Rashba, what defines food? What's the most important component of food? The Rashba also quotes a pasuk. He says that, I forget where he quotes the pasuk from, where the pasuk said, Pasuk just says that food tastes good. That's all Pasuk says. So the Rashba says, what's the most critical part of food? So yeah, we know. There's nutritional value. It's all nice. Tachlis, what do we eat? So we eat. It tastes good. So says the Rashba, taste of food is not something which is tangential. Taste of food defines the very essence of the food itself. Says the Rashba, you can't ignore taste. If you could taste food, so that's ki'ilu, you could see the food. Because at the end of the day, ma'anef kamina, the blind taste test, ma'anef kamina, what the food looks like. I mean, the caterers won't tell you that. They'll tell you if you put the most delicious food and it looks sloppy on the table, no one's going to want to eat it. Yeah, that may also be true. But the bottom line is, the real ikar of the food is the taste. That's why, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu made a lot of foods that taste very good. Kadosh Baruch Hu made a lot of foods that are very healthy. I guess we would have preferred that there would have been the proportion between the two would have been better. But not Chalil that we're questioning the Bria. But usually what ends up happening is that the better tasting the food, not necessarily the most healthy food, but the taste of the food is an eager component of the food. So the Rashba says that's called Nikar Issa. The reason why Nais and Tam exists is every Nais and Tam is by definition called a Nikar Issa. Whenever it's a Nikar Issa, by definition, Bitl Barov can't apply because it's not a Taravis. So what we just developed is that the only thing that could ultimately undermine Rov is really Nikra Issa. That's the only thing that could really throw into question the ability to rely on Rov. But Nikra Issa takes on many, many different modes. There's Nikra Issa according to the eyes. There's Nikra Issa according to the statistics in the blackboard. That was the Rosh and Chulin. Then there's Nikra Issa according to the taste. That's the Rosh and Maseches Chulin. But ultimately, the only thing that could really undermine Bittul Barov is the principle of Nikra Issa. Right, that's Bittul Barov. That would be Bittul Barov. You have three hot dogs, you know two are kosher, one straight. So in a chalami, they're kosher. According to the Rosh, you can eat all three together. According to the other Rishonim, you can't eat them at the same time, you can't eat them together, but...
Up to 1,000 hot dogs still?
Well, it depends what happens afterwards. So now you have two kosher, one tray for now what happens? Now you add another tray for in. So that once you add another tray for it, now you don't have Rov anymore. Now you have two and two. So that's the din of Chos V'Neir. That's exactly what we said. That's the din of Chos V'Neir. This halacha that Bittul Barov is so all encompassing that Bittul Barov changes the Metzias, that it's Issa Nebuch Lios Heter.
You said Chozer Veneer, so if you have, let's say, two kosher hot dogs and one non kosher, they mix themselves up. Right. Do you say you can Rove. Eat any of the three or all right. of them, right? And now you get another non kosher.
So now you don't have Rove anymore, now you have two or two.
It's Chozer Veneer, now you have three that are good.
No, Chozer Veneer. What you just described is what's called Kama Kama Bottle. Chozer, that means the first one became, Chozer Veneer is the opposite. Chozer Veneer means that the Issa that used to be there now came back to life, just woke up. So the Treva Hotdog now woke up and it met the new Treva Hotdog. The two of them became friends and now you have a 2-on-2. So that 2-on-2 you can't eat. It's not tough.
What was the other
two? Kama Kama Batil. It means that's the opposite of Chozer Veneer. Notwithstanding the fact that this principle of Rov is such an all-encompassing principle that is an epoch Lios Heter, there may be a certain limitation to the principle of Rov, and it may emanate from the very fact that Rov does change character traits, that itself may cause a certain limitation to the power of Rov. There is a tshuva in the Ein Yontif, beginning of Siman Daled, where he raised the following question. He says, we know that loch is that tzitzis strings have to be made lishma. They have to be spun. The wool has to be spun in lishma. Whether or not the tzitzis have to be put onto the beg of lishma is a different question. But the fact that the tzitzis strings have to be made themselves, the cheftz has to be manufactured lishma, that's for sure. I shouldn't say for sure, but in the Gemara, we pass it for sure that the tvi has to be done lishma. So the other raised the following question. What's the din? The person has a bunch of strings, and they were made lishma. He's got 25 strings that he knows were made lishma. And then he has a couple of strings that were not made lishma. They made regular tailor, made for other purposes. And the strings all get mixed up together. And now he has a rove. So the rove of the strings in this batch were made lishma. And the minority of the strings were not made lishma. Can he go ahead and take four strings out of this batch and use them for tzitzis and say rove? In the realm of Yisurim, I have three pieces of meat, two kosher hot dogs, one treif hot dog. I can eat the hot dogs because the Quran, the hot dogs, tells me that it's built with a rove. So in the realm of mitzvahs, it's not going to work. Mitzvahs are more called than averus. Why shouldn't it work? Well, let's say you can have a real shayla. Let's say you have matzahs. You have matzahs that were baked in the Shema. So we know in order to be yotzei in the midst of matzah at the Seder, this machlekes is a Rishonim, we pass them that they have to be baked in the Shema. So I bake matzahs in the Shema, so I have my machine matzahs, and I assume that those are also called the Shema. So I bake my machine matzahs in the Shema, and then I have other regular matzahs that are floating around, and they all look the same, and they got them, but they all got mixed together. So the Shia is going to come to the Seder, I'll pull yank out a matzah, and I'll say, okay, based on rope, 9 out of 10 matzahs were kosher, so I'm going to pull out a matzah, and my stomach's going to be okay. Can you say Bittul Barov when it comes to the realm of mitzvahs? Just as in the realm of Averas, so Bittul Barov permits you to eat the meat, so to the realm of mitzvahs, Bittul Barov permits you to eat the yotze with the matzah, Bittul Barov permits you to wear the strings, use the strings with tzitzis. What's the difference? So the Ein Yontif suggests a distinction between the two, which really gets to the core of the issue of Issa Nebuch Lios Heter. Says the Ein Yontif, the principle of Bittul, we find in Halacha, is able to remove character traits. you have a tray for a piece of meat on the table, so it has a certain halachic character traits to it. It's a tray. It has physical character traits, that it has it has X amount of cholesterol, X amount of taste, and this coloring, and this, whatever it is. And it has halachic character traits, namely that it's nevela, and it's chaza, whatever it is. I'm not allowed to eat it. So bitul berov means that if something becomes batel, if you think about it, think of the word batel, batel means it becomes nullified. So that means its character traits lose. It loses whatever traits it had, whatever halachic character traits it has, no longer exist. So if it doesn't have the characteristics of treif anymore, then it's kosher. Everything is mutter to proven asa. We've said this many times. Everything is mutter to proven asa. Some people think everything is asa to proven mutter. Some people have a very misconception of halacha. They think everything is asa even after proven mutter. So that's not true. So everything is mutter to proven asa, as it says in American law, l'havdil, innocent to proven guilty. So the starting point in all life is everything is mutter. Now you have to find out, is it asa? Is it chazer? Is it nevela? Is it chometz? Pesach? Is it yom kip? So you have to figure out a reason why it should be asa, but everything is mutter to proven asa. So you have a piece of meat. The reason why it's asa is because it has the characteristics of chazer. Comes Ilkos Bittul and says, it's ois chazer. It doesn't have the characteristics anymore. The characteristic of chazer is batel. Once the characteristic of chazer is batel, so the mele goes back to it, its original state of heter. So says the Yadi Yantif, what we find Bittul able to do is Bittul is able to remove Isurim. Bittul is able to remove characteristics of problematic characteristics. Where do we find that Bittul is able to endow something with properties? Where do we find that Bittul can take something that doesn't have a certain characteristic and grant it that characteristic? So the Marshall, the case of the Tzitzis. So I have strings. So I want to create a cheftza of kosher strings. I want to say these strings were made l'shma. In the case of the matzahs, I want to create a cheftza of a kosher matzah. I want to say that this matzah was baked l'shma. Can I do that? Bittul is going to help me. No, all Bittul means is that it's a removal of characteristics. It's issa nepach lios heter. But we don't find that rishus nepach lios mitzvah. Means we don't find that the Torah ever gives us the ability to endow something with characteristics of kashrus. We don't find that it endows a piece of matzah as being a matzah that now has the characteristics of lishma. We don't find that the strings that look like regular strings have now been endowed with characteristics of being made lishma. So l'chora, Bittul is going to fail over here, says the other Yontif, because Bittul is a nepach lios heter, yes, but we don't find that rishus nepach lios mitzvah. Unless one goes the other route of Bittul, unless one doesn't go the route of the Rosh, unless one goes more along the lines of the Tosfos Rid, that Bittul never endowed anything with anything. Bittul never changed any characteristics. All Bittul was statistics. Bittul was an assessment that we made. We play with the odds. So, does your field actually, you got to play with the odds. They got to do all that. You got to play with the odds. I have a piece of meat in front of me. Can I bet? Can I wedge my bets on that? So, can I head through it? Can I say that it's Mutter? Can I say that it's also? Do we have a right to rely on that? So, Ram Nahatas tells me that I can. So if that's all Bittul is, Bittul doesn't transform anything. There's no great changes. There's no halachic transformation going on in Bittul. Everything is the way it was. It's just a question of statistics. So the Chara, it's the same statistics in the world of Yisurim as it is in Mitzvahs. So if the Torah says that the statistics are working in your favor and therefore you can rely on them, so if a person wants to make that same cheshbon when it comes to matzah, why not? A person wants to make the same cheshbon when it comes to tzitzis strings, what's wrong? So it could be a strange thing that we usually think that the Rosh's understanding of Bittul is in a sense better, is more powerful, is more encompassing than the Tosfos Rid. Tosfos Rid's Bittul was so shvach, Bittul doesn't know anything. Bittul just the statistics. Whereas the Rosh says, no, Bittul's more than that. Bittul is set up if there's heter. It could be that in the case of the mitzvahs, it's going to come out the other way around. That the Rosh's Bittul is going to fail us in the realm of mitzvahs, whereas the Tosfos Rid's Bittul is going to help us. Unless one argues the Rosh also accepts the Tosfos Rid. Oh yes, it becomes a problem. The Moshul of Dayanim, the original Moshul of Dayanim. So you are so convinced, you already live post Reb Chaim. So you're already in the world that Bittul Barov is based on Dayanim.
But if you say it's Kamadu Lesser, then it's like an ending of the air.
Right. So the Chora, before Reb Chaim, no one ever thought, no one ever came with this great idea that Bittul Barov is based on Dayanim. It doesn't say, I mean, the Gemara never says that. The Gemara says it's Achrim Lahatas, but it's not exactly the Moshul. And we had a big problem with Chaim's Moshul Dayanim, because the Chorus of Dayanim is Emuch HaNikra Issa Gold Mizeh. The guy's screaming out Potter, and I'm saying, nope, he says Chaim. Mm-hmm. the packaging says potter, and I'm saying chayiv. So Rav Chaim's marshal, it's a gevaldike marshal, but it doesn't seem to fit into all the details of your idea. So it's a little bit of a problem. So I would guess that the Anagyantif was not looking at Bittul through the eyes of Rav Chaim. But whatever the case may be, so it comes out that these really two different ways of viewing Bittul, whether it's the Taisus Rid's version or the Rush's version, is now going to spill over in the opposite. That could be that the Rush's version of Bittul is going to become somewhat more limited, whereas the Taisus Rid's version of Bittul is going to become better in the realm of mitzvahs. You mean, is there anything wrong with... So the Acharonim have a question about this. About, let's say you have a case of Bittul, right? So you have two pieces of meat, kosher ones, right? Get mixed up together. And a guy wants to take the following out. The guy wants to say, listen, you know, I know that it says in the books, it says in your day, it says in the Gemara Chulin, there's a Bittul Barov. But I bother, I don't want to rely on this. It's out of Rosh Hashanah, I want to live up to a higher standard, I don't want to rely on Bittul. Is that appropriate? Is that not appropriate? So some Acharim seem to say, yeah, that's a good thing. You know, why should you rely on Bittul? But if you rely on Bittul, you know, if there's no need to. If you want to be Machmir and not to rely on Bittul, so that's fine. And other Acharim have a very, very strong Lashon, quote from a Rambam, a very, very strong Lashon, that if a person takes that attitude that I'm not going to rely on Bittul, that almost smacks about the curses. Because the Torah said it's mutter. What do you mean? The Rebbe Shalom said it's mutter. No, I'm more machmir than the Rebbe Shalom. The same Torah that says in Al Arichaz is the same Torah that says Acharam Lahatas. But you don't believe in Acharam Lahatas? It means you're a kofer. It means you're a bikaris. The point that you first another says, this guy's a kofer. He doesn't believe. Doesn't believe. It's like a person who says that I don't believe in Erevin. So we know that there are a lot of shilas about Erevin, a lot of humras and kulas and machloikes about Erevin. So a guy wants to take the attitude that I don't want to rely on this Erevin, I don't want to rely on that. I mean, come with enough humras that you'll end up never relying on any Erevin. Okay, you want to take that attitude. That's you know, tavo lecha brach. Whatever you want to do, that's fine. It's between you, and your wife and the Rosh Shalom. But for a person to say I don't accept Erevin, I don't believe in Erevin. That's as foolish as I don't believe in Bab Metzia. I don't believe it. It's a Masech and Shas. I mean, you don't believe in Erevin. Chazal believed in Erevin. It means that's part of Tosh Mabed. There were dinim of Erevin that were given halacha Moshe Mesinai. Whether those halachas play out properly in the construction of any given Erev, okay, so there's a lot of shittas, there's a lot of machleksim. You want to be machmer, isn't that? You want to be machmer. But to say that a person doesn't believe in Erevin, so that's mamish kfira. So that's the same thing. According to some poskim, a person says, I don't believe in Bittul. You don't believe in Bittul. You don't want to rely on Bittul. The Rav Shalom said it's mutter, so you have to rely on Bittul.
Right.
That's why I can. I just kind of over dramatized it. So that's a question. Can a person even take that attitude? Is that even appropriate to take that attitude? But I hope I can get back to the story. So Bittul Barov really has many, many different shades. The Bittul Barov, different permutations of Bittul Barov, and Nafkaminas Ladina, how it's going to play out in the this idea of Rove, which has really been the carry today, which is hopefully the next time we can. I mean, we still have a few minutes left to share. No, we're not ending now, but we have to move out of the realm of Rove a little bit. We still have a drop left of Rove, just a little mash left. There's plenty left of Rove, but for our purposes, just a little bit left, just a drop left of Rove. That's a question concerning Rove. When we speak about Hilchos Taroves, so the terms that usually come to mind is Rove. That's the matir. The matir is a chiram lahatos. Is that the only matir in the Taroves? Is there a concept in the Taroves that maybe sometimes Rov may fail for us? Sometimes Rov, for whatever technical reason, is not applicable, and we still may be able to be matir in the Taroves? Is there any other din lurking in the Taroves besides the application of Rov, as we've been discussing? So there is a Chiddush in one of the Rishonim, it's called in the Mordechai, at the end of Maseches Chulin, one of the Rishonim develops a whole Chiddush within the principle of Rov, which throws a monkey wrench into Hilchos Taroves. There is a Gemara that appears in Maseches Yevamos in the Sugyas of Chalitza. The halacha is that when a woman does Chalitza, so one of the processes that she has to do is she has to spit. She has to have roach. She has to spit in front of the Dayanim. She has to spit in front of the Yavam. The Dayanim have to see the spit. It's the din of Rakika. So the Gemara raises the question, what's the din? And the Yavama gets ready to spit, and all of a sudden she gives a spit, and what comes out? She's got a cut in her mouth. The mouthful of blood comes out. What's the din? Is that considered to be the Yarko Mefarav, that she fulfilled the mitzvah of Rekikara? It's not going to be Ma'akev, the Yevet, even if you don't do Rekik at all, the Chalitza is going to be good. But the question is that a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Rekikara? Do we have to tell her, stop, get your mouth fixed up, clean it up, and start all over again, get a little bit of spit? So the Gemara says, that's all right. The Gemara says it's okay, even though what came out seemed to be blood, because there must be some saliva in there. Yevshir the dabli tichtuche reik. There's got to be a little bit of reik, a little mashu. There is no shear to how much saliva has to come out. It just has to be witnessed by the dayanim. That's all. But it doesn't have to be a whole mouthful. we have a minig, shanim kol chumra, when we do a chalitza, so we tell the woman that she should try very hard to collect, really, really collect. She shouldn't just walk into the base and start spitting. She should wait for a few minutes. After she does the chalitza minas, we tell her to wait and to gather her saliva. She gather. So the dayanim should see the saliva, they should see the rok, in order to fulfill the mitzvah properly. But technically speaking, even a mashu, as long as they see a mashu, the mitzvah rikiku would be fulfilled. So the Gemara says that even though she spat out a mouthful of blood, that's also okay, because there's got to be a little bit of rok in there. So comes the Mordechai and asks the question, that's very nice, there's a little bit of rok in there. Now, lom the shashan, what do we say, the rok is batel barov? The same way that the trefa hatok is batel barov, the same way that the tits is maybe batel barov, so the little bit of rok that's in there is l'chara going to be batel barov. So what happened to the principle of batel barov? How come batel barov fails us here? Again, here batel barov is going to cause us tzaras. You can't cheat with bitl barov. You can't just pull it out of the hat when you want it. It works for you, it works against you. So hilachar bitl barov should work against you. You should say that whatever little drop of saliva is there is bitl barov. How come you don't say that? So the Mordechai begins to analyze that shayla. Why don't you say that? So the Mordechai quotes from the Vishayim the following yisoid, that the principle of rov doesn't apply when it's what's called in halacha bala olam b'taroves, when the two things together, the davar mevatel, davar esbatel, are coming together naturally, in the natural order of things. A woman is spitting, and the blood and the spit, they're all coming out naturally together. They're entering into the world in the state of tarovas. So even though it's true that, biologically in her mouth, there was saliva and there was blood, and the two got mixed together in her mouth, but what's going on inside her mouth doesn't concern us. What concerns us is once it's yatzel avra olam. So once we first see it, it's already in the state of tarovas. Bitl berov means when you have a little bit of chazer, the chazer is sitting on one side, you have a little bit of kosher meat, and hocus pocus, the two of them get mixed up together. That's called bitl berov. You have two things that get mixed up together artificially, that's called bitl berov. But when you have a bitl that's bala olam b'taroves, so the whole principle of bitl falls by the way. So you can't have a bitl when it's bala olam b'taroves. That's the yisoid that the Rishonim quote. It's quoted in the Mordechai in the end of Maseches Chulin. So come the post-Kim in Yeridea and begin to analyze this principle of Bala Olam B'Tarovas. What exactly are the limitations, what are the parameters of this limitation of Bala Olam B'Tarovas? So the context of the discussion is a wild, wild context. And for those who are learning the Yomi, so I had it a couple of weeks ago, it's based on a sugya at the beginning of the fourth parak of Maseches Chulin. It's... The Gemara discusses a whole sugya that if you have an animal and the animal's pregnant, you have a baby, the baby's inside, and now you shech the animal. So we know the din is that if you shech the mother, the baby inside, so the baby is nita b'shechita se'eim. The baby is considered to be covered by the shechita of the mother, and there's actually no need, at least in that Torah, to even shech the baby. So even if the baby is born, and now it's walking around, it's a full-term baby, and it's walking, spazzering around, it's walking, and it's given milk, it's given wool, you're working it. So technically speaking, you're allowed to eat that baby alive. Technically speaking, it doesn't require shechita, because it was already nita b'shechita, it already had shechita. That's what's called an aloha ben pakua. So the Gemara says as an exception to the rule of ben pakua in the following context. Let's say before the mother was shechted, the baby was already in the process of being born. So it stuck its arm out before the birth, and then it brings its arm back in again. And now you shech the mother. So the Gemara says a strange thing, that the whole animal is kosher, with the exception of that arm. That arm, which was already quote-unquote born, the arm that came out before Shechita, is not nita b'shechita se'eim. It's the first thing in the fourth parak of Maseches Chulin, and the Gemara learns that from Apostle, Bosa was a trefa, gazeres hakos, but they're nice, complicated sugya, in the fourth parak of Maseches Chulin. So you can have a very, very mundane situation, where you have an animal walking around, and 95% of the animal is kosher, and there's one part of the animal, that's treif. Not only is it treif, there's nothing you can do to solve that problem. Even if you shech the animal, it's still treif. That arm that came out before the shechita was chal on and ashamed treifas, it's a treifa arm. And if you go ahead and eat that arm, you'll be chay malchus, if you eat part of that arm of that animal. So it's a very, very bizarre situation in halacha, where you have an animal that most of it is kosher, most of it is shechted already, and part of it is treif. How does the shayla get even more complicated? So the Gemara discussed the following shayla. We know there's a din that anything that comes from a kosher animal is kosher. Anything that comes from a non-kosher animal is not kosher. So the Gemara says this animal now grows up and starts to produce milk. So, a female, so years later it gives birth, starts to produce milk. What's the status of the milk coming out of this animal? It's a modern shayla. 95% of the milk is kosher and 5% of the milk is treif because the milk is coming from the animal. So the Gemara has a veterinary shayla. The Gemara wants to know which part of the animal is producing the milk. Can you say that the milk is being produced by the whole animal, is being produced by part of the animal? Very, very strange. strange old discussion in the Gemara about the status of a milkless animal. Do we say that this animal's milk is kosher? Do we say the animal's milk is treif? So in Yeridaya, in the side of Yeridaya, when the Acharonim quote this halacha, so they quote the following chiluk. They say it depends how much of the animal left before it was born. If it was a very, very small part of the animal, say, the animal just stuck out its pinky before it was born, and then it brought it back in, and then you shechted the mother, so that pinky is not a treif. So you have a tiny amount of the animal is treif. If it stuck out its entire leg, and the entire leg is treif, my nafkamina like having the milk, it's a big nafkamina. If the amount of the entire animal corresponding to that small pinky is more than shishit, if you have more than 60 times of kosher animal, a little bit of a treif animal, so then it's bottle, everything is okay, everything is fine, you can drink the milk. It's like taking a big pot of kosher milk and putting a little drop of treif milk in it, it becomes bottle. But if it was a big part of the animal that exited beforehand, then it's not going to be bottle. I'd kind of post him say, it's bottle b'shishim. Depending on the size of the amount of the limb that left before shechita, that's going to determine the status of the milk. So come the Acharonim and then Halacha, the Mishnah Melech, and the Yudah others and say, what? What does that do with bittul? How can you apply bittul here? Isn't this bala olam b'taroves? Isn't this a taroves naturally together? The milk is mixing up inside the animal. The milk's coming out of the udder of the animal. It's bala olam b'taroves. This is not bittul b'rov. Bittul b'rov means when I said, two pieces of kosher food, one piece of treif food got mixed up together. Two artificial things that nothing to do with each other, and they got superimposed one on the other. That's called bittul. But if it comes into the world, the tarovus, what kind of bittul is that? How could that be a bittul? The whole principle of bittul doesn't make sense. Like the case of the yavama spitting. So what's the difference between the yavama spitting and the case of the milk? So the Nevi Yehuda says the answer is as follows: that there are two different halachas of bittul. There's a din of bittul berov. Bittul berov, 2-1. The 2-1 ratio. The 2-1 ratio is learned out from Dayanim. Yes. The Yehuda was read pre-Rav Chaim, but he said the same thing as Rav Chaim. He says the 2-1 ratio, that principle of relying on Rav, the only possible source for that is based on Dayanim. If it's based on Dayanim, so it has to be similar to Dayanim. It has to have all the characteristics of Dayanim. What's the characteristics of Dayanim? Is that it's not a natural Tarovus. It's three different entities. There's Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. Three different guys sitting on a din Torah. They weren't born together. They're not Siamese twins. They're three different people who happen to get mixed up together. They happen never to be sitting on the same base. Then two of them are saying Chayv, one saying Potter. That's when Bittul Berov kicks in. So says the Nidvi, that's why the Rishon and the Mordechai said, you want to invoke the principle of Bittul Berov. Bittul Berov has a limitation. Bittul Berov has to be separate entities. It can't be one entity. It can't be Bola Olam Tarovus. That undermines the moshul of Bittul Berov learned out from Dayanim. But says in that view, that what if you're not relying on Bittul Berov? It's better than Bittul Berov. It's Bittul B'shishim. Now, usually Bittul B'shishim means there's no tam. You can't even taste it, even if you want to taste it. If a little bit of chaza falls into potato soup, I can try from tomorrow. I can't taste the chaza there. Says in that view, that's a new halacha. Whenever there's no tam, whenever it's so far removed, it's Bittul B'shishim, that's mamish kamandalesa. That doesn't exist. That's a new parsha in the Torah. Learned from other pesukim, other drashas. That doesn't exist. Bittul B'shishim is a new entity in and of itself. So says in that view that even though Bittul Berov isn't going to apply, Bittul B'shishim is going to apply. And therefore, Bittul B'shishim is not subject to the requirement that it be not Bala Olam B'tarovus. So you say for the night. What you really mean to ask is as follows. But the later folks can ask is, wait a second. There is no din called Bittul B'shishim, it's Kamanda Lesa. First you have to paskin, it's Kamanda Lesa based on Bittul Berov. After you apply Bittul Berov, then you have to ask yourself a second question. Is the tam or the no tams? If it's been B'shein Amino, that's a problem with the Raisa. If it's been B'vino, it's a problem with the Rabbanon. But the first step to answering any Tarovas, the very first beginning of any equation to be about any Tarovas, is you have to ask yourself, is it Bittul Berov? You can't ignore Rov and say, oh, Rov, don't bother me with Rov. I don't care about Rov. It's going to be Mutter because it's Kamanda Lesa. There is no such principle called Mandalesa. There is no second din called Mandalesa. The din is Rov. If you have Rov, then you're okay. If you don't have Rov, you're not okay. After you determine that you have Rov, then you have to ask yourself, is the Tom, is the no Tom, is the Shishman? But if you can't get to the batter's box, if you can't be mocked based on Rov, if Rov doesn't apply, then Nafla Yisrael, Nafla Binyan, then the whole thing unravels. So this is a tremendous, tremendous chiddush that these poskim are having. The Pasha's advar is that there is no second din of Bittul. Rov carries the day. If Rov carries the day, it's got to be like Dayanim. Bolelam Tarovus is not going to be acceptable. So Akoponim, this principle of Rov is very, very helpful. We've had Rov in terms of Ruba de Isikamans, and we've had Rov in terms of Ruba de Leisikamans, we've had Rov in terms of Bittul Berov. This becomes helpful in many, many areas of Allah. hopefully as we go on in the future shiurim, we'll see a little bit more the limitations of Rov, and we'll try to speak about some of the other principles that relate to Rov and how the interplay of Rov, some of the principles of Chazaka. So we'll hopefully continue with some of the Sheish Maitz Sigis as we go along. So just in terms of the schedule, I think next week, I'm not sure how practical it's going to be, because next week is Tom Gedalia next Sunday. So that means I think we're diving, starting Slichas here at 7:15. So that would mean a 6:30 Shiav, there would be one. I think maybe we'll put it on hold, okay? So we'll put it on hold next week. Then the following Sunday is Derev Yom Kippur, that we can have a Shiav. Okay, we'll have a Shiav. Either we'll be in Yom Diyom, we'll be these things, we'll figure that out. And then after that is Zerich HaLamois, people are away. So well, I guess we'll put that on hold also. So we'll have kids and no Shiav next week, Shiav the following week, no Shiav the next week, Shiav the following week. So we're off and on for the next couple of weeks. Okay.